I think before we're going to move on today, we've allowed things to accumulate over here since we began Perek Osin Pasi. And the last overall review that we did of the Masechet was only of the first Perek. So let's just get a sense of where we are over here in Osin Pasi, because it's a complex sugya. Okay, so let's just look over our Osin Pasi over here. Okay, so we started off with the sugya of Diyumdin. And when I say the sugya of Diyumdin, I mean literally the sugya of Diyumdin. Not the whole idea, but what exactly is meant by Diyumad. So after discussing the general question of the shitas of the Mishnah, we went into a whole deal about Diyumad and dualism and the Bria of Adam as Diyu and all the other places where we have duos. And that led us into the question of the dangers of those Du Partsufim and dualism in general, which led us straight down to hell, and that was all about Gehenim and about the Pitcha Shel Gehenim and where we would find that Petach and so on. And then into a continuation of the Diyumdin, but the relationship of the Pshutin to the Diyumdin. So as we made the area bigger, were we going to add to the Diyumdin, or were we going to add pieces that are called Pasim or Pshutim between the Diyumdin to make it area, the bigger area, make it enclosed by a petach. Then we went into the question of the status of Diyumdin. Do Diyumdin have a din of a mechitza in various cases? We talked about a chotzer's doors opening between the Diyumdin. And we spoke about if the water gets dry, what gives it a din of a mechitza? And we spoke about if Rishus HaRabim comes through it, is it considered to be Diyumdin? All of this is still the question of Diyumdin per se. It's all part of the sugya. Then we got into the question of where are we mater the Diyumdin in terms of the hashkaya, the actual use of the Diyumdin for giving the water to your animal. That got us into the whole shot. Do you have to hold on to the animal? How much of the animal has to be in there? Rosh HaVeruba of Pura. And we brought us to the sugya of, remember, the feeding trough, the Avos, which was raised, that you were going to slide your bucket along it. Those are, of course, side issues, but they're all part of the question of Diyumdin. Then we began talking about the overall idea of the heter of Pasei Beiraot, not the Tzura of Diyumdin itself, but where did we apply this heter of Pasei Beiraot? That led us into the question, does it apply to Adam? Does it apply in Bavel? Does it apply in Chutz La'aretz? And the issue of the Tzura Chametz, which led us into a side discussion about Tchumim and Burgundy in those places as well. And that brought us to this deeper question of constituting a new idea that would come specifically from the Rabbanan, that give us a new getter of what we mean by a mechitza, which led us to an understanding of the nature of a Torah Shebaal Peh as a whole. And that led us into understanding what we mean by the midah of Torah Shebaal Peh, the information contained in Torah. We made all those beautiful drushes of the Arucha Me'eretz Midah and about the Megillah and about the relationship of 3,200 times the information in Bria and about the chashivas of the Torah Shebaal Peh and the way in which you could be derish, tilei tilim shel halachas on every coat when we actually discussed Rabbi Akiva himself and so on. Okay, that moved on to an entirely new area of the parak. The new area of the parak had to do with, in fact, area. What about the area? How big is the area? It started with the question of the area of the Bein HaPasim, which was the machlokas about whether we're talking about a Beit Satayim or it doesn't really matter. And then we wanted to know, does it include the whole area? Is the area measurement of the bar, particularly and only the bar? And the question then would be what the relationship is of the use of the rabbim to that area, whether that's mevatel its din as an enclosed area or whether that turns it into an open area. So that was the big machlokas about what constitutes the use of the rabbim. And that was the issue of whether we need necha tashmishte. Does it matter if there's a continental shelf in terms of the overall idea of Rishus HaRabim to be mevatel mechitzas? Would they be mevatel mechitzas on that scale? And that brought us into a deeper understanding of the hierarchy of mechitzas, the different levels of mechitzas. I'm not saying this all in the Gemara, but once you see the Rishonim, how the Gemara expands, the idea of the hierarchy of mechitzas and its relationship to how it's being used by a rabbi, which was very, very nogeh halacha lemaisa in terms of Hilchos actual Erevin bizman hazeh, all of those issues we learned, including the one about giving things over into the ownership of a Yochid and Yoshua. Then we talked about literally area. When I talk about area, was the machlokas about where does Beit Sa'atayim apply? We talked about the question of the Beit HaPasim and about the Gan and about the Karfaf Shalok of Fladira. And where does the Shir of Beit Sa'atayim come from? And that, of course, got us into an understanding of the Chotzer HaMishkan and the Machlokas Hashitas about whether we are supposed to be using the square root particularly, which is going to be, obviously needs to be rounded off, or whether we're going to be using the actual measurement of the number of square amos in the Chotzer HaMishkan. That turned out to be a Machloket, and it makes a difference in two ways. It was the question all started with how we darsh el chamishim b'chamishim, and if the Torah is meramis to us that we're supposed to be using the square root particularly, instead of simply saying how big the Chotzer HaMishkan was. So then, according to Rabbi Akiva, that has two implications. First of all, it means that it is better for us to apply the din of Beit Sa'atayim as an actual square. That's A. And secondly, it means that we're supposed to use a rounded off value for each side of the square. That's where we came up with the closest, easily used fraction that we could use of the square root of the 5,000, which was the number of amas of the 50 by 100. And that gave us essentially the idea of the additional 2/3 of an amma. And we ended up losing 6 amas because we multiplied the 71 and 2/3 by itself, and that came out to 4,994 instead of 5,000. So it was no gei halacha. And then we also had the shaila of Rabbi Yossi, who said that the shape is in fact not no gei, and that adarabba, the normal shape in the Mishkan is perfectly okay. And to Rabbi Eliezer and how he fit in with Rabbi Akiva. That's basically where we've been up till now. So that means we were looking at the yundim as a specific idea, this new heter of Ben HaPasim and where it would apply, the rights of the Rabbanan to create this kind of incredible new takana, which of course brought up Shlomo HaMelech and the issue of the original takanas of the Rabbanan, and then to the overall question of the different areas that are mutter with very types of mechitzas, where we met the interrelationship in the most powerful way of people living, the diurim, that is to say, with the mechitza, which up until now were two different issues. The Masechet had begun with, first of all, what does a mavoi look like? What allows you to carry in the mavoi? Forget about whether there's other people there. And then we get, ultimately, we haven't even gotten there yet, but we know we're going to get there, to the need for making the Erev, or the Shitav of the Mavos that had to do with the diurim. But here we finally actually discuss the nature of the mechitza in terms of its diurim. And the technical term to that, of that, was hukaf ladira. So there were different dinim of mechitzas for a shetach that is hukaf ladira, as opposed to a shetach that is not hukaf ladira. And that is going to give us a lot of grief today in our trying to come to understand the interrelationship between these different shtachim. So let's just remember, we had a three-way machlokas in the Mishnah about whether there needs to be some element of using an area for purposes of lifestyle, even if it's a vacation home, or if it's close enough to your home that you would go there and just hang out for a while on Shabbos, so it would be within the tchum, or others hold even closer, or whether it's enough just to have some kind of water supply there, so that also makes it hukaf ladira. That was a three-way machlokas that we had, and whether you actually need something, even if it's less than sa'atayim, or whether, as Rabbi Akiva says, in which we paskid like yesterday, with a kula, that if it's Beit Sa'atayim or less, you don't need anything there that shows that it was hukaf ladira. The moment that it's more than Beit Sa'atayim, if it isn't hukaf ladira, it becomes osur. So only the last thing that we learned was this interesting case of where something was hukaf ladira, And the problem is that you changed its use. So the case was you had a backyard, which your house had opened onto. It was perfectly okay to have a very large backyard because it took a fladira. Wouldn't make any difference how big it was. And then we talked about a case where you planted trees. Okay, so you plant trees. That was not considered to be a problem because trees, you're happy to have in your yard, and they in no way restrict your use. On the contrary, they make it a much more beautiful yard. So you did landscaping. That doesn't change the yi'ud, so to speak, from diur to a low diur. But how about if you turned it into a garden? If you turn it into a garden, that's a problem because you certainly, you may not mind going tiptoeing between the tulips, but you certainly do mind tiptoeing between the tomatoes. And because of that, we said that if you actually turn it into a garden, then you have flipped its use. And if most of the area becomes a garden, so then the whole area becomes also. Now, that's what we were talking about yesterday. Now, that raises some very serious issues, and it's important for us to understand them before we get into the complexities of what is coming up. Because in actuality, you did not turn the entire yard into a garden, right? You turned a particular area, so you turned most of the yard into a garden. Okay, that does not describe for us the area of the part that was turned into a garden. So doesn't that matter? If the garden itself is a Beit Satayim, so then it would become a garden as opposed to a karfaf. Now, let me explain why that's important. Remember the big machlokas we had and we discussed. We haven't gotten yet to the main sugya, but we've brought it up a number of times, both in Masechet Shabbat and Masechet Erevin. What is the relationship between different types of sub-areas that all have the same dinim but have completely different names? So we've got an outside area of a chotzer. We've got the outside area of a mavor. We've got the roof. We've got your backyard. So this would be karfefot, gagot, chatzerot, mivoot. Now, they all have the same din when we've got a problem with them, so that if there's an issue, they are a rabbanon-created problem, which comes from the way in which we see them as different purposes and therefore different types of usages. Now, this is a whole new halacha. Because up until now, we talked about the way something is shaped and how, first of all, we started talking about the way there's actual mechitzas. That was the main din in Masechet Shabbat. But then we got into, here in this Masechet, the other problem of diurin and shapes. So there are places that look too much like Rosh Hasharabim. They'll remind you of Rosh Hasharabim. We don't let you carry there. There's places that look like Rosh Hasharabim because they're open into Rosh Hasharabim on one end. That's a mavoi. There's places that remind you of Rosh Hasharabim because they're very big and they're not meant for people to be living in. And so they look like public areas. You can't carry in that if it's Yoter Mibeit Satayim. There's areas that remind you of non-private usages such as open fields or gardens, which were also considered to be non-carrying areas, which the Rabbanan created when they created the din of a Carmelite, because they're not really non-carrying areas. They're all Malkum Patur, Midiraisas. So we've got a couple of new issues besides the actual mechitzas themselves. We've got the way in which an area is shaped that led us into whether it's longer than it is wider and so on and so forth, or whether it's open on one end, or whether it's open on both ends, or whether it's more than Beit Satayim. That is already a question of use once we get into the Yoter Mibeit Satayim, because it's got mechitzas all around it. So that raised the issue, can you carry from an area of use A to an area of use B? So in other words, would you be allowed to carry, let's say you've got a lawn chair in your yard, and the question is, you want to carry that lawn chair to your roof and move it to a roof or to someone else's roof. The roof on the building, it's an apartment building, somebody else has got that roof and you've got this roof. That was a tremendous machlokas, if you recall. According to Rabbi Shimon, remember in the sugya of Mila, when we allowed you to carry the knife from the chotzer to the karfaf, from the karfaf to the roof, from the roof to the mavoi, and that's how we got the knife there, even though we didn't have an eruv. But that was because it was in the chotzer at the beginning. So we didn't take it out from a diurim problem area because it didn't come out of the house. There was no diurim issue. but we took it from different usage areas. So Rabbi Shimon says, all similar, halachically similar, usage areas are considered to be one. So you could carry up to a roof, even though it belongs to somebody else, as long as it was in a mokum where it wasn't specific. In other words, it wasn't in your home. It was outside, an area shared by everyone. Bring it up to another area shared by everyone. I don't care. And that is Rabbi Shimon Shita. The Rabbanan say, no, different usages are just the same as different mechitzas in terms of the halacha. What nafkamina would this make? Very simple. There's a general rule that when an area is open to an area in which it would be usher to carry, let's call area A is open to area B, and it's usher to carry from area A to area B. So then that's called, if it's parutz and it doesn't have a door, so then it means it's parutz l'makom sha'asurla. Any area, which of course was the whole idea, if something is completely open, a mavoi is completely open to Rishus HaRabim, then the mavoi is aser. But what about if a karfaf, which is hukaf ladira, is completely open to a garden, which is not hukaf ladira? So then that would be dependent on the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbana. According to Rabbi Shimon, the definition of what the place is does not create a new iser to carry into it, correct? So before it was a karfaf, now it's called a garden. What do I care? You're allowed to carry from a garden to a karfaf. The only problem would arise if the garden itself is larger than Beit Satayim, so then the garden becomes a makom aser. So then it's a real karmelit, and then I've got a problem, even according to Rabbi Shimon. But just because an area is defined as a garden, if I'd be allowed to carry in the garden, so then I'm also allowed to carry from the garden to a karfaf that is next to it that was also hukaf ladira. Now let's talk about the case that we talked about. You've got a backyard. It's a rechava, me'achorei abatim. Now, that rechava me'achorei abatim, you're allowed to carry in no matter how large it is because you built your house first, and then you went ahead and you built a backyard around it. I don't care how big the backyard is. You went ahead and you planted the garden. Now what happens? We came up with a statement yesterday. Well, what happens is if you planted the garden, now you can't carry in the whole area. Why can't you carry in the whole area? Well, there's a number of different possibilities. I mean, I don't know how big that garden is. And that's what it is that we're going to discuss today. But this is going to be very much nogea, this brand new concept. Out of this brand new concept of the way that different things interrelate, we're going to expand the systems, which we never spoke about before, systems of areas open into other areas. Rechavot that are open into mavois, which are open into places that are hukaf ladira, which themselves are open into Rishus HaRabim. We need to discuss the entire system as one area. That gets more complicated than what we've been dealing with until now. So we're going to be moving. We started off gradually by a change of use within an area that now might define the area that is differently used as a new Rishus, depending on the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. And from there, we're going to move into places that became usher because of their new usage. Maybe they got too big, the garden. If it's more than a Beit Satayim, then even Rabbi Shimon is might have, wait a minute. So now it's not hukaf ladira, I can't carry into it. So now if my backyard is open to an area which is not hukaf ladira, now my backyard becomes usher simply because I don't have a door between the two of those. That even I agreed to. Okay, so that is all going to be nogea, how we learn this last piece of the Gemara, and it opens up a Pandora's box of different interrelationships between Rishuyos. However, not all is lost, because this would be nogea having a swimming pool in your backyard. How big of a swimming pool could you have? And what? This is seriously the issue that is going to be raised today. So at what point does the swimming pool become too big to be considered mukav ladira? That we'll see. Okay. But anyway, let's move on. We started off today's daf in Masechet Erevin, which we'll begin now, is daf Chof Dalet. And we're holding on daf Chof Gimel Amud Beit, and it would be nice to see this once again. So what we said yesterday was that in a case of a karfaf shu yoter mi beit sa'atayim, you see this about 8 lines up, shukaf ledira, and everything was good. Now nizra rubo, but now that you planted most of it with tomatoes, it turns into a garden. And now it's usher. But if not a rubo, you put a bunch of trees there, that's fine. Then it's still a chotzer and it's mutter. So here is today's new chiddush. Nizra rubo says Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yeshua, well, it depends if the garden, what the garden area was more than Beitz HaTayim. That makes the garden area usher, right? So if it was a Beitz HaTayim itself, however, it would be mutter. Why? Isn't it a garden? Once it's Beitz HaTayim, I mean, it's already a shame of rishus for itself, and it's a garden rishus, and are you allowed to carry from a chutzer into a garden? Aren't those two different types of defined areas? Yes, they are. But I am going like Rebbe Shimon, Kiman ke Rebbe Shimon, because Rebbe Shimon Shita is roofs, chatzeros, karfefos, you can carry from one to the other, and it doesn't matter who owns them. They are all considered to be reshut achatein, as long as the things that you're moving from one of them to the other are things that were in one of them at the beginning of Shabbos. They didn't come out of your house. You can't take it out of your house, which is now defined as a separate reshut in terms of diurin. But these areas that are usagely defined and not diurim defined and not mechitza defined will not create a different rishus vis-a-vis carrying different things. Therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, and this was the literal the case that we had about the they needed to bring that sack in for Mila. You can bring it as long as it was out in the chotzer, it was in a mavo. You can transfer it all over the place and it wouldn't be a problem. And so therefore, I say like this. The moment that the area itself becomes more than a Beitz HaTayim, the garden, now the garden is usher to carry in the garden proper. Well, that means it became a Carmelite and it's usher. So now my backyard is completely broken open, so to speak. It's as if the wall fell down into a Carmelite. So my backyard is now open into an area that is usher for it. So here we have the equivalent of a collapsed mechitza. Despite the fact that nothing collapsed, all that I did was I created a sub-reshus of a Carmelite within my big backyard. But since I didn't build a Tzuras HaPesach or a doorway or a mechitz of some kind between my backyard and my garden, I now cannot carry not in my backyard and not in the garden because they're both open into a reshus that's usher. This is a new idea, important for us to remember in order to catch the whole issue of this daf. So everything would fit in well. The problem is, says the Gemara, this only works out according to Rabbi Shimon. Is it possible that you would limit yourself to Rabbi Shimon? No. Because actually, the Rabbi Shimon Nami, given the Nizra Rubo, Havayahi Miut Botel, Legabe Ruba, Vavile Karfaf, Yotermi Beit Sataim, Vaaser. So therefore, that couldn't have been what Rav Huna said. Because it wouldn't have worked out even according to Rabbi Shimon. Why? Because over here there's a different issue. The different issue is, how do I define an enclosed area between mechitzas? I'm going to give it a name because that's what it is that we've determined. Different usages define the name. What if there's multiple usages? Then you go according to the rov. So in this case, most of the area that had been enclosed by this mechitzas is now garden. Garden area. That means that what you're looking at is a garden area, whether there are tomatoes there or not, because the rove will define its usage. So now when I go into my backyard, I am going into my garden, not my backyard. Therefore, I look at the entire area. Hey, how big is your garden? You mean the tomatoes? No, I don't mean the tomatoes. How big is the garden between the walls of your backyard? Hey, but that's not fair. There's not tomatoes all over the place. It doesn't matter. This area has been defined as a garden. As a matter of fact, we noted that you put up a little sign, exit to garden. Ha ha ha, we caught you. So the point is that your whole backyard is now measured as one. Is it more than Beitz HaTayim? Then you're not allowed to carry it because gardens are not called dira. Great. So therefore, it would have been bottle, it would have been a karfa for the Beitz HaTayim, and it would have been aser. Okay, so then it couldn't have been that Rav Huna was saying that it's only in a case where the garden was more than Beit Satayim would be also, because then he's ignoring an obvious deal, which is defining an area by its most prominent usage. So forget about that. Scotch that. We made a mistake. It wasn't Rav Huna said. What Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua must have said that does make sense is that since it said over here that if most of the karfaf was planted, then it becomes a garden. So then that means if only a little bit of it was planted, then it's not considered to be a garden. There is where Rav Huna said, wait a minute over here. That depends on how big the garden is. I mean, what do you mean most? I mean, but how big is the backyard? Suppose your backyard is 5 Beit Sa, which is perfectly okay, right? But then if your garden was a full 2 Beit Sa, you'd be in trouble. Because the moment that it becomes 1 Beit Sa, it is no longer considered to be batal, because it gets its own shame of a garden. So you'll say, okay, who cares if it gets its own shame of a garden once it's 2 Sa? Remember, there's less than 2 Sa, it doesn't have significance. There's more than 2 Sa, it's not hukaf ladir, it becomes aser. It's precisely 2 Sa, it's mutter to carry in it, but it's mutter to carry in it because it has its own name, garden. So then, even if it would be the miut, and this is what Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua must have been saying, even if it were the miut, the din would be that it is its own rishus. And therefore, you've got a break in a wall. There never was a wall, but for all intents and purposes, now you've got a break between your chatzar and a garden that's aser. So you'll say, so? Rabbi Shimon says gardens, karfavs, backyards, front yard, they're all the same rishus. Ah, but I'm not going like Rabbi Shimon. I'm going like the Rabbanan. So this version of Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua is exactly the opposite. Since, according to the Rabbanan, what defines the heter of carrying from one rishus to another is what? Usage. That means part of your backyard is backyard usage, and part of it is now a different place, which is called garden. Uh-oh. Is there a door between them? No. Is there a tzurza pesach between them? No. Nothing? Uh-oh. So you can't carry anywhere. So because of that, Rav Huna is saying, I'll leave it to Rabbana, you wouldn't have been able to carry at all. Ha! Now, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Midifte, he says, no. He was saying, actually, lakula. What he was saying was, yes, he was certainly saying, less than that, it would be mut. If it was only a miut, right? Then it would be mut. And Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua said, when do we say that? That's only where it itself is mutter to carry in. Why? Because it's exactly a Beit Satayim. Obviously, if it's less than a Beit Satayim, but if it's literally a Beit Satayim, according to this approach, he's going like Rabbi Shimon, and he's saying, if it's exactly a Beit Satayim, it's still mutter. What? How could it still be mutter? This is a garden. You can't carry from a chutzner to a garden. Yes, you can. If you believe that Rabbi Shimon is correct, and I believe Rabbi Shimon is correct, the only time it would become a problem, even a little bit of Rabbi Shimon, is when it got bigger than Beit Satayim. Then it became a Carmelit and it's a Mokom Aser. Even Rabbi Shimon is made. That's like having a Mechitza break down to Rosh Hashanah. And you certainly can't carry until you fix the Mechitza. In this case, until you build a Tzuras HaPesach or some type of opening to your garden to be Mechalik between them. So it was Yotari Beit Satayim, it would be Aser, and that would be according to whom? Only according to Rabbi Shimon. Great. Now, we also said that if you planted trees, now wait a minute, I mean, planting trees, there are definitely people that take this to an extreme, aren't there? I mean, there's people who let their yard go completely wild and you can barely walk in the yard. So, I mean, are we talking about landscaping or are we talking about wild growth? So comes along Rav Yehuda in Avivi's name, and he said, only landscaped. We're not talking about just trees all over the place. If you've got a nicely designed rows of trees, places to sit, yes, that's called itztabla'ot, where you've got a structure, you've got a matrix of the trees. But without that, and it's considered to be a violation, now it becomes a forest and not a front yard. Whereas Yehuda, he came to visit Rav Huna Bar Yehuda on Shabbos, and he saw him sitting in his beautiful yard It was all filled with trees, and it did not have any structure at all. He did not like structure and went in very much for the natural look, you know. And he was sitting out there, and actually he was carrying his punch from the house out. He was carrying all over the place, and he didn't care about the fact that this was bigger than a Beit Satayim or anything. So obviously, Bar Yehuda asked him, don't you hold to what Avimi says that, you know, needs to be landscaped? And he said, no, I actually agree with Reb Nachman. Reb Nachman said, that's how I paskin. I don't know what these guys, they got overstructured in minds. Anyway, now what would you do to actually be matir? Let's say a place was originally not built as part of your house. So you built a house in an area that was surrounded by previously existing walls, which was a karfaf that was yoter mi beit satayim. And even if you open up doors from your house into it, that does not turn it into a hukaf ladira, because it was not built for dira. And remember the idea of the mechitzas as defined by the diurim. This is a very important point, is that the mechitzas were made for diurim, not that they happened to be used by diurim. We met the first concept of that idea when we spoke about indigenous users, as opposed to people who simply walk through, that people who walk through are irrelevant to the way in which we define the reshuyas. This is an extension of that idea, that the actual mechitzas themselves are defined by what they were built for. We talked about yesterday the difference between man-made mechitzas and natural mechitzas in terms of continental shelves and the hierarchy of mechitzas. This is another concept that has to do with that. It doesn't matter what they are now and how they're being used now as much as what they were made for when it comes to this heter of hukaf ladira. So therefore, I want to know, how would I change a place that wasn't hukaf ladira into a place that was hukaf ladira if it doesn't work to just open up a door from my house into the area? We'll see later on in the Masechet that this is actually machloket, but right now we're assuming that this hukaf ladira means only if it was made that way in the first place. So what would you do? Well, you'd have to make a pirtza. A pirtza can't just be an opening and a way to walk through, because anything less than 10 anything 10 amot or less is considered to be an entryway, right? And it's not considered to be a broken wall. So you'd have to break down the wall. And you'd have to break down the wall to slightly more than 10 amot. Okay, now you're missing a wall. Okay, so what do? So then you rebuild the wall. I mean, you don't have to rebuild the whole wall. You could rebuild 1 inch of the wall, because that way you would turn it into Eser Amot exactly, which would be an opening. But now that wall would be made specifically for purposes of Dira. And in that place, you're Mamido al Eser, and then it would be Mutter. Now the question is, and this comes straight out of Kalim, as I'm sure you will immediately notice. Now the question is, suppose you break down one Amma, and then you fix it. And then you break down another Amma, and then you fix that. And then you break down another Amma until you finally get to 11 Ammas, that you're up to the 11th Amma, which is really only one Amma now, because you've got a beautifully repaired wall. And now the question is, do I look at the total area, Acha Shlima Liyoter Mi'eser, or do I say, listen, I mean, the wall, there was never a time that you lost your wall. But the other guy's saying, well, wait a minute. This whole piece of wall is new. I mean, yes, it's gradually new, but it's new. And if each piece of it was made in order for it to be a dira, so then I've got 11 amas that are rebuilt specially for dira. So that should make all the difference in the world. What's the halacha? Mahu. So Amar Lehu, he said to them, well, that's the Mishnah in Kalim, of course, isn't it? I mean, Lav Hainu Ditran Kol Klei Balei Batim Shiurin Kirim Onim. What's the shear to be Mevatel Kli Eitz? If a pomegranate is able to go through it, so then you're going to throw out the Kli. Okay, so now Chizkiah asked about that halacha. What would be the din if it got a hole in it that allowed olives out, let's say, right? Which is not Mevatel Kli Eitz. Okay, but then you went ahead and you bought a little bit of liquid wood, you know, and you sealed it up again. And then it got another hole next to it. And you seal that one up too. And it got another hole. You sealed that one up too until it finally got to be the size of a hole that would be Motzi Rimonim, but you sealed it up. So now the question is, does it lose the tumah that it had on it or not? Because, I mean, basically it got a hole the size of Motzi Rimon, but it never had at any one time a hole that's Motzi Rimon. And the Gemara said to Chizkia, which is a totally new concept, and we've talked about it many times, Rabbi Yochanan said to Chizkia, Rabbi, you told us, basically from the Mishnah in Kalim, that the din is, and that was the sandals that we spoke about, right? So if you've got a sandal and it's got these ritzuot on it, so one side, one of the oznayim, one of the straps, broke off on one side and you fixed it. It's still tamei midras if a zov had been standing on it before. Now when you fix it, now the second one breaks and you fix that. It's now tarim in a midras. And for some reason, it's only tamei because it touched itself, so it's tamei as if it touched midras. And you explained, right? I mean, how do you guys understand this, huh? I mean, why was it still tamei midras when the first side, the first strap broke? Because the second strap is enough to use it, so it didn't use it shame as a kli, right? Okay, so then I fixed the first side. And now the second side broke. Why magically is it different when the second side breaks and now all of a sudden it loses its tumas midras? You could still use it, and therefore at no time did it lose its shame as a kli. And we were all sitting there scratching our heads. Gee, I don't know. And you told us what the pshat is. Amartlan, you said that's because of a new idea. Panim chadashot bo'lakan. It's because although there was no time when it lost its shame kli, but it is now a different kli than it was, right? Because it's got a whole new look. Look at the Rebbe. I mean, this is basically panim chadash as bo'lakan, right? Nobody's going to confuse this with the payas boy. Okay. So now if that's the case, everything becomes new. And therefore, all you can say is it never lost its shame kli. So it touched itself and was makabel tuma from its old self. Uh-oh, I didn't mean that as far as rebbes are concerned. There's so you can be makabel tuma from your old self, but basically this is still a new self, right? So then the same thing is true over here, because basically you broke down your wall one amma at a time. And so I say it's the same as the Mishnah in Kalim. Ponim chadashas bolakan. Whoa, said Chizkia. This kid is a genius. This was Rabbi Yochanan he was talking about, of course. Kore ale leit dein barinish. This guy is no human. I mean, this is superhuman thinking. Fantastic. Who would have thought of comparing sandals in Kalim to creating new mechitzas in terms of hukaf ladira? He's got a very, very active, open mind. Or others say, on the contrary, he said, no, this guy is human. What's wrong with all you guys who don't know how to use your brains? Okay. So maybe what he says, Kagon Dane Barnash. Yeah, that's what a human being is supposed to be like, you know. Anyway, so we're saying now that actually that would be sufficient. Omar Rav Kana said, listen, if you've got a back area that you hadn't built at in terms of your home, if it's bigger than Beit Satayim, since if you don't have a door from the house, l'chatchila to it, then you're only allowed to carry like a Carmelite. You can only carry within Arba Amas. Furthermore, said Reb Nachman, if, however, you open up a door from one of the houses, so then you can carry through the whole thing because the Petach is Matirit. But that's only if you first had the door and then you built the backyard. But if you built the backyard and opened the door, it's like, well, for God's sake, well, obviously, what are you saying? If you first open the door, you're not giving us much new information. I mean, if you first open the door and then you built the backyard, obviously you can carry in it. That's the classic definition of hukaf ladira. What's Reb Nachman coming to tell us? No, Reb Nachman was talking about a case where there's a storage area behind the house. And you need to get there because that's where all of the food is kept. It's the grain the beidari, the place where you keep grain. So ma'odatema daitet beidari avde. So you might have said the initial opening was not in order to define the backyard. The initial opening was because I needed access to the beidari, so I had to go through the back door to my kitchen to get to the beidari. That doesn't mean I'm interested in the backyard. I would maybe have to define the interest as a backyard door instead of saying a granary door. Therefore, Nachman's telling us that's irrelevant. The fact that there was an opening is enough for me afterwards to be kolel the backyard as a place that I was hukaf l'dira. Now we get to the swimming pool problem. So suppose you have a big backyard and it got filled up with water. What's the din over there? So the Rabbanan thought to say, the Talmidim wanted to say, well, I mean, that's like a garden, you know, now it becomes a carmelite and it's also in the whole backyard. I don't know. I guess Rava's got different tastes than you guys have, because he says, on the contrary, water, as Rashi says, that's the best, man. Water is actually more like the trees, because now you've got a swimming pool. So that's even better. Oh, says Hamema, okay, I mean, but that's only if it's like nice, clean water. You're not going to go swimming in a bunch of garbage water, are you? So how the chazin l'tashmishta? If it's nice water, then fine, then it's a swimming pool. But v'lo chazin l'tashmishta, so then you're right, then it becomes like a carmelite. Omer Ravashi, well, wait a second. How big of a swimming pool is okay? Because a swimming pool is not chotzer. Once the swimming pool gets to be more than Beit Sa'ah itself, then what happens? So if the deep area, when we say the deep area, we mean more than 10 tefachim, because less than 10 tefachim anyway is never mevatel rishus. Remember we said that even in terms of rishus harab, and people will walk through it ultimately. But the deep part is more than a Beit Sa'ah, yesh ba'omko, yoter mi Beit Sa'atayim, I meant Beit Sa'atayim, of two Beit Sa'ah, then it becomes usur, because it has its own din, and you can't carry in it, so then it would be like carrying in the garden, which is ridiculous. That's not true, says the Gemara. Of course that's not true. Who cares how big your swimming pool is? It's still part of your yard. It's your swimming pool. Is that the same as a garden, which you're not going to be using? So that's not true. Lav milti, mitad avi akaria de peri. Let's say you've got this big pile of peirot. You're going to tell me that becomes rishus b'fnei atzmo? Or you've got this ditch that's filled with peirot where you keep all the things for feeding your animals or using in your kitchen? Certainly not. So no. I disagree. Okay, now for the first time, we get to the systems question. In other words, where we have interrelated rishuyos that work together in a particular way. And if they're not working together, then they're working against each other. Now, for this, I think you're going to need, does somebody have the picture book? I neglected to look at what picture book we're talking about. Hold on. If somebody has the picture handy, it would be nice. On Chav Dalet Amud Beit. So it starts in picture number 142. Okay, so there was this case. Does everybody have the picture? This was the picture. So there was a case in the town of Pum Nahara, and there was a backyard. So it was a rechava. I'm looking at the... Okay, this rechava, I don't know if you can really make it out. I hope you have the picture in front of you, because for me to show it to you like this is really not coming out very well. But you've got this large area over here where you see there's houses that are open onto it. So that's like a commons, but it's backyards. It's not a chotzer. And it opened up on one side to a mavoi that was part of the town. You see where all the little red roofs are, right? So it opened up into this mavoi. And then the other side was this beautiful shvil shel kramim. And this shvil shel kramim ended at a seawall. Now the seawall didn't stick up, it was down. It was not very noticeable if you were standing in that area. And this is going to turn out to be choshev later on in the sugya. So we had Chad Gisa was open to a Shvil Shel Kramim. So there were two doors. One went to the a Mavoi in the town, which was Patuach to Rosh Hasharabim on the other end. And this side went through vineyards. And that ended up on the Guda Dinara, was on the banks of a river. And it was larger than two Beit Sa'ah, the Rechava, and had not been opened up to be Mukaf Ladira. So because of that, it's usher to carry in that. And so now there's a big problem over here. Why? Because the Mavoi that went to the town was open into this Rechava, and the Rechava itself was a Mukam that was usher to carry in because it wasn't Mukaf Ladira. So then it turns out that both of those become usher. And as far as the other end of the Mavi was concerned, it had whatever it needed. But, you know, that was the machlokas, doors, teresa, pesach, and so on. That was fine. The part of the Mavi that entered onto the big highway, which was on the other side of the little red-roofed houses, that was closed off. But the problem is that this end had nothing on it and was opened directly into this big rechava. So then people decided the Rechava, they want to make it a place that is going to be Hukaf Ladira, which meant that they needed to deal with this question. Doesn't help to open the doors of the homes, which they did. How would they restructure it to now be called Hukaf Ladira? It was a problem to actually, I mean, obviously they could have knocked down the walls and rebuilt them, but that was difficult for them. They were looking for a simple halachic solution. So they came to Abaya. So Abaya says, okay, let's think about this. So what could be done to make it simple here? I mean, I could put a mechitza on the other end. Because if I put a mechitza on top of the wall at the river bank, so then that would close off the whole system, right? The only reason it wouldn't work, why would it work if it was called a mechitza? It would work because it's one system. A Mavui, Rechava, a Shvil Shel Kramim. We see that as all open into each other. So if I would build a mechitza on one end, it would be now Hukaf Ladira, because this would also help for the people in the Rechava, because now their area would be closed off. Problem is, there's already mechitza there. Just because people don't notice the mechitza, which is the seawall going down, doesn't mean that it helps me to put another mechitza of 10 tefachim on top of that. What's the big deal of adding a mechitza on top of a mechitza? A mechitza, ain't no si mechitza, gabi mechitza, because it won't achieve anything. What I could do is make it Tzuras HaPesach, right? And then I would be able to close off the entrance from the Rechava into that beautiful vineyard path over there. That's the Shvil Shel Kramim. And I would have a Tzuras HaPesach over there. It's not going to work because they have these camels in the Rechava that always come to the riverbanks to drink. And those camels would for sure knock down the Tzuras HaPesach. And so it's not going to help me to put up a Tzuras HaPesach over here. That's exactly what happens when the electric company trucks come to fix the trees. And inevitably, the Erev is down, as you well know. So they toppled the Tzuras HaPesach in those days.
It happens
all the time. So in those days, they had camels, not the tall electric truck ladders, but whatever. So the camels would come and they would knock down the Tzuras HaPesach over here. It means they knock down from the side because they had to fit themselves through. So that's not a solution. So I've got another solution. What I could do is I could put a lechi could be tiny. I mean, it could be 1 millimeter, right? So I can put a lechi up against the opening to the Shvil Shel Kramim, and then migu d'mahani l'Shvil Shel Kramim. Now, I understand that a lechi is useless when it comes to the actual rechava itself. It didn't make any sense because that part wasn't open. So it was basically, it wasn't more than 10 amos. So over there, if it was less than 10 amos wide and had mechitzas on either end, if you're sitting inside of the Rechava, then you see gidudi on both sides. You see 30 feet of wall on either side, and then you've got this entryway into the Shvil Shel Kramim. What's the point of a lechi? It doesn't do a darn thing for that, right? because I've got like the biggest lechis imaginable. I mean, I understand that there's a different rishos. The problem is that if you're in the Shvil Shel Kurumim, the Shvil Shel Kurumim is completely open into the Rechava. So now if I want to turn the Shvil Shel Kurumim, which had homes entering into it, which do not appear here, but Rashi says that's the only way that the Lechi would work in Abaya's logic, is that ultimately the Shvil Shel Kurumim was just a glorified Mavui, which was closed on one end by the riverbank, but which on the other end was open into this Rishus, which was public, in the sense of being a Rechava, and I needed to close off the other end. So I could close off the other end of the Shvil Shel Kurumim just with a Lechi, which would now make the Shvil Shel Kurumim a Mavui that would be mutter to carry in for the people that are out of the homes. Once it would get a din of a Mechitza vis-a-vis the Shvil Shel Kurumim area, then it would also be considered to be a Migo. That Migo, it's a Mechitza for the Shvil Shel Kurumim. Now it will be a Mechitza for the Rechava as well. And then that would be wonderful. So Migo de Bahani, the Shvil Shel Kurumim, it would also help for the Rechava. Says Rava, well, technically, yes. Practically, no. I'll tell you why practically. I disagree with you because people don't understand how this thing works. Because people, they will think that what that means is that you can use a lechi on a Shvil Shel Kurumim, a general Shvil Shel Kurumim, which is open. I mean, it's completely open on both ends. People do not realize that the river bank is considered to be a valid mechitza. So you can't do that because you're misleading people. I'm telling you, there's a very simple solution over here. You put a lechi on the other side. The entrance from the Rechava to the Mavui of all those little red roofs, that is the area of the Mavui. So over there, that Mavui in the town, didn't it need, it had a Tzuras HaPesach on one side, or a door on one side, right? But it still needs a tikkun for the other side that opens into the Rechava. So why not make a lechi for the people in that Mavui? So now they can carry based on this lechi that is facing the side of the Rechava. And then there's no problem at all, because once it helps, Migo de Bahani lechi lemata, obviously it doesn't do anything for the people in the Rechava because they have a beautiful doorway there. But once it helps for the people in the Rechava, now it redefines the enclosure of the backyard. And here you've got an amazing case where you have rebuilt the wall of a backyard that was originally not made for Dira. And now by putting up one lousy lechi, which was a millimeter thick, you ended up redefining the mechitza of the Rechava. And now no additional construction will be required, in which case I have saved you $200,000. That will be $10,000, please. And we've got ourselves a fantastic sack over here. And once that's true, once I do that, then I can carry in the Mavui, because now that Mavui is sealed for both sides. And now I'm able to carry in the Rechava too, because now the Rechava is considered to be the question of Mukaf Ladira. Doesn't matter how big it is. My only question is, can I carry from the Mavui into the backyard? That we'll have to discuss tomorrow. But meanwhile, we've done some very fundamental, I'm sorry it took so long together with the review, but we have done some extremely fundamental work today in extending our understanding of the interrelationship of various Rishuyot, which we hadn't talked about before. The first hint we had of the interrelationship was the case of the Chotzer that opened up into the area of the Bein Adyumdim. So it opened into a Pase Birot, but that was a completely different issue. That was a question of whether we make a Gezerah and so on and so forth. But now for the first time, the fundamental question of the interrelationship of defined Rishuyot and what exactly defines them, whether it's diurim, whether it's bechitzas, whether it's usages, and the sizes that are required for those definitions, such that now it turns out more than Beit Satayim creates a Carmelite, precisely a Beit Satayim gives it its shame for whatever it is, based on the Chotzer HaMishkan, less than Beit Satayim would be defined by how does it fit in terms of percentage-wise, into the overall area of the mechitzas in which it's included, and also the relationship, according to Rabbi Shimon, between variously defined usage areas, and according to the Rabbanan, which are usur, and then the way that we can make systems of these areas, mavui, rechava, shvil, mechitza, tzuris ha-pesach, lechi, which helps for one and not for the other, and so on and so forth. This is brilliant, extremely rich area. One last thing I want to say. I know it's late, but this is very nogea halacha lemaisa today. 90% of the Eruvin in Eretz Yisrael are not kosher. And the reason that they're not kosher is because of this Gemara. And that's because in almost every yeshuv, they make an Eruv around the yeshuv of Etzuras HaPesach, but there are places in the yeshuv that are garden areas or field areas that are larger than Beit Satayim and are not hukaf at all. And they rely on the Tzuras HaPesach to be one hukaf around the whole thing. But this Gemara tells you that even where something is hukaf for true mechitzas, then that's the case where you were makif a big place, it's got big stone walls all around it, and you build a garden in the middle of it. The moment the garden is Beit Sa'atayim, then the area that opens to the garden is usur, because now it's open to an area that is usur ale. This happens everywhere. So they put up a beautiful Tzurat HaPetach, but they never isolate the areas that are more than Beit Sa'atayim and not Mukaf Ladira. So that, the question, of course, about how we paskin in this Gemara, most of the Shitas paskin, according, especially the Chazon Ish, is very makban on this, paskins like the way the Gemara seems to come out, but Pashtas, that once you have an area that's defined as the Yotari Beit Satayim, then even Rebbe Shimon would be made. This is considered to be a Mokoma Osurla. The only way to make such an Erev work would be to cut off those areas with their own Tzuras HaPesach so that they would not be included as being open to the rest of the town, or to be semech on other ways of understanding the sugya halacha lemaisa. But this is a very serious problem of carrying. Okay, anyway, there were problems like this even in Yerushalayim, outside of the Erev of the Badatz, which they took care of. There was a problem like this in Netanya, where the Erev of Netanya was even talking about even in big cities, which they recently took care of a couple of years ago. But, I mean, like my kids live in the Neve Michael, and you can literally see the areas over there that are not Mukaf Ladira and that are completely open to the rest of the Shuas. I'm sure that Robert's got his problems with this issue as well, trying to have hashpa on the Moatza and so on. But okay, to be taken into consideration. All right, everybody, have a grand day. Please be mechumi for going over time today. Hopefully we'll get back to a good schedule tomorrow. See you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.